This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 77. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
It's so good to be here.
It is great to be here. I feel really good about episode 77. You know why?
Because it's lucky sevens.
You know why?
Oh, why else?
Because we're kicking off not one, but two books, and I'm already pretty well into.
Ahead of the game.
Almost done, in fact.
We had somebody... I can't remember if it was on Goodreads or Twitter now, who was like, can you give us more warning when you're going to kick off a book so I have time to get it? I'm like, when we announce the book is actually the warning. So we'll try to give you enough time to read it before we wrap it up. And yeah, we gave you the warning on both these books last week. And we'll formally kick them off this week. That'll give you a little extra time.
A little extra time. And the real book that we are reading, the actual pick, Ready Player One, is not that long. So it should be a pretty easy read.
Snackable.
It's snackable. It's snackable. The audiobook's like 13 hours long, I think, too. So
I think this will be the first time we'll kick off a book that I'm already done with.
Ooh, really? Well, there's been books that I've read before that we have read.
I'm not
that have
counting
been rereads
that. Yeah, like
for me.
Dune, for instance, I had already read it once, but I started reading it again for the book club. No, I've already finished with it because I just loved it that much.
Very cool. All right, well, let's kick everything off with the quick burns.
So SF Signal did this chart based on the NPR Top 100 Science Fiction Fantasy Books. We talked about this previously on the show, but we haven't talked about their chart. A ton of people have been sending me this link. I'd give you all credit, but there's just too many of you who realize this is the perfect chart for Sword and Laser fans because it's a flow chart, and it starts off with, where should I start?
I can't imagine Fantasy how many hours went into this. It's insane. How big this chart is.
And it's not just so fantasy is on one side and sci-fi is on the other. You could say yes to fantasy, yes to sci-fi. You could say no to both. And like, no, can't I have both? No, I only read books with pictures. No, what about horror? And it takes you in all these different directions. And eventually, through answering different questions, leads you to the appropriate book for you to read at that time.
Nice. And there's some big favorites on here, like Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman and Name of the Wind and Lord of the Rings and William Gibson. And if I scroll, because I have to scroll to see the whole thing, Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson, Journey to the Center of the Earth, 2001, A Space Odyssey, Lucifer's
Hammer.
Okay,
so just as a sample, I'm going to ask you some questions. Okay. You answer them. We'll see where we end up.
All right, so you ask and I'll answer. Yeah, that way I don't have to pay attention to the chart.
Fantasy or sci-fi?
Fantasy.
I pretty much live in a fantasy world already. Are you going to be upset when you don't find Harry Potter?
No.
Okay. I know where to find him if I need him. Are you new to the fantasy genre? Yes, no, or maybe?
Ha ha. No.
No. I'm what you call experienced. Mm. Like the Arthurian legend? Yes or no?
Depends on the retelling. Yes.
Yes, I own The Sword and the Stone on DVD and VHS, or no, looking for modern day settings?
No, looking for modern day settings.
Okay, I thought that definition sort of changes it. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, yes, I'm a city person. Maybe I'm partial to small towns, or no, let's find another world.
I'm a city person.
All right. Gods or people under the streets?
People under the streets.
Then you want to read Neverwhere by Newman.
Look at that. That worked out well. That was fun. Do you want to do it or should we do it for another time?
Yeah, let's do me another time.
Okay. It is a lot of reading, isn't it? It's cool, it's though.
Just, I just don't want to bog people down. They can play on their own. We've given them the example.
We've given them a taste.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm sure I'm always saying her name incorrectly, but you know who I'm talking about. There is a recently reprinted story of Le Guin's, and it's about an island of immortals, and it sounds really cool. It got a write-up over on Io9, and here's how it begins. Somebody asked me if I'd heard that there were immortal people on the Yendian plain, and somebody else told me that there were. So, when I got there, I asked about them. The travel agent rather reluctantly showed me a place called the Island of the Immortals on her map. You don't want to go there, she said. I don't? Well, it's dangerous, she said, looking at me as if she thought I was not the dangerous-loving type, in which she was entirely correct. She was a rather unpolished local agent, not an employee of the Interplanetary Service. Yendi is not a popular destination. In many ways, it's like our own plane, in that it seems hardly worth the trouble of visiting. There are differences, but they're subtle. Why is it called the Island of the Immortals? Because some of the people there are immortal.
Thank you,
Dr. Obvious Travel Agent.
The Island of the Immortals is actually the name of the story. You can find it at lightspeedmagazine.com if you're interested. But yeah. As Io9 points out, you know, Torchwood and other shows have started to point out immortality is not all it's cracked up to be.
Not all it's cracked up to be, that's for sure. Take it from me.
Smithsonian.com has a really interesting post up, which isn't about fiction and isn't even about fantasy and sci-fi per se, but it's called The Top 10 Books Lost to Time. And so I just feel like it's fodder for possible science fiction and fantasy stories, because these are books that we know about, but we actually don't know what was in the book. They give examples like Shakespeare, lost plays, Homer, famous for the Iliad and the Odyssey. His previous book was called Margit, and little is known about the plot, but it is a comedic epic poem. Lost Books of the Bible, William Shakespeare's Cardenio. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites was the Inventio Fortunata, an account of a 14th century Franciscan monk who thought he had found the North Pole.
Wow.
Inventio Fortunata is also called The Discovery of the Fortunate Islands. A copy was given to King Edward III of England as a travelogue. So there's, you know, a Jane Austen book, a Herman Melville book.
Yeah, this is interesting, too. The book that Sylvia Plath was writing when she actually committed suicide, she had already written 130 pages. It was called Double Exposure. And it was either called Double Exposure or Double Take, and she never finished it. So it's a lost book in that sense, too.
Yeah.
And apparently those pages have disappeared as well.
Right, exactly, because her estranged husband took control of her estate and...
That's kind of like the fourth book in the Stieg Larsson series of books.
Oh, interesting.
There is apparently a fourth book in the series that is either done or nearly completed. And his girlfriend, who did not actually get control of his estate after he passed away because they weren't married, she is apparently, in a way, holding it for ransom. I'm not trying to use that in a negative connotation, because I do feel that she...
The girl who held the fourth book for ransom.
Right. I mean, I think she's trying to have some control over his estate in a way that she should be entitled to. So it's an interesting story. There was a big write-up about her in a newspaper that I read recently. It may have been Vogue, actually, come to think of it. But a very, very cool story. And also cool to know that there might be a fourth book eventually on the way.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that she's not just bluffing.
Yeah. Well, should we head on to the calendar?
Let's do October 4th. That is today or tomorrow, depending on how fast we get this published and how fast you download it and listen to it. Infidel by Cameron Hurley comes out. Hurley returning to the blood-soaked, bug-powered world of God's War. Check it out if you're into the Hurley.
Mm-hmm. And on the 7th, we have Heirs of the Blade by Adrian Tchaikovsky, the 7th volume in the Shadows of the Apt series and the conclusion of the second story arc in the overall series. Sees the story move on to the Dragonfly Commonweal, whilst the Wasp Empire begins its resurgent expansion.
October 11th, three books coming out, the first of which is The Children of the Sky by Werner Vinge. Long awaited, really, it falls short. Fans have waited 20 years for the sequel to A Fire Upon the Deep. Ravna Bergsendot remains on the Tynes planet. I know I mangled it. Stranded with 100 rescued children by the fight against the Blight. The menace is thought to be gone, but she's worried there might still be some scrap of the threat intact and waiting to rise again and finish wreaking havoc.
So all of us complaining about the, you know,
George R. Martin, six, seven years wait,
we got nothing. We got nothing on
Werner
Vinge.
The Children of the Sky, folks.
Nope. And then also on the 11th, Snuff by Terry Pratchett. Pratchett's 39th Discworld novel reunites us with Sam Vimes, a.k.a. His Grace Sir Samuel, the Duke of Ankh, the commander of the City Watch, as he goes to spend 2 weeks in the country at his wife's family estate. Sam faces the prospect of mind-numbing boredom, but... Yeah, right, like it's going to stay boring. But soon finds himself investigating some heinous rural crimes, including the murder of a local goblin girl. Good thing he's got some local assistance.
Aw, he does, from some pretty famous people. And also on the 11th, Richard K. Morgan's The Cold Commands, a sequel to The Steel Remains. Morgan reunites us with Ringel Eskith and his friends Agar and Arketh, but this time they face an even bigger challenge. One of Kiriath's machine intelligences has fallen from orbit, and it's warning that a legendary creature is awakening the Ilrak changeling. That does not sound good.
That does not sound good. On the 18th, we have Aloha from Hell by Richard Kadrey. In the third book of Kadrey's Hardbitten fantasy series, James Stark faces the prospect of a return trip to Hell. Naturally, he'd prefer not to return to the existential plane that served as his prison for a decade. But with his nemesis holding his dead girlfriend's soul hostage, Stark doesn't have much choice. And just don't expect him to be sunshiny about it either.
Starks are always having problems in all kinds of books.
They're always, issues.
A little farther down the line, October 20th, The Iron Jackal by Chris Wooding comes out. It's the third volume in the Tales of the Kedi Jay series.
Yeah, and then on the 25th, we have 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. The year is 1984, and the city is Tokyo. Of course, it wouldn't be a Murakami novel without it being
in Tokyo.
Somewhere cool in Japan.
Yeah, totally. And just a side note, so many people have been contacting me about how I find the release dates for this stuff, where's a good calendar for sci-fi and fantasy releases. And as I've mentioned before, I kind of cobble this stuff together from a bunch of different sources. So I have put it up on the website. If you go to swordandlaser.com/calendar, or just go to swordandlaser.com and click on the calendar button up at the top right, you will find not just the stuff we mentioned just now, but also stuff going all the way through to November. And of course, if you know of release dates, stuff that you think should be on there, by all means, send them to our email address, theswordandlaser@gmail.com.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a quick moment for a break. This podcast, of course, is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles. Actually, I think they have now surpassed 100,000.
No kidding.
Yeah,
that's
I think
crazy.
They have over 100,000 downloadable titles now. Of course, across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And of course, since we are kicking off this book, we recommend you check out Ernest Cline's Ready Player One, as read by Will Wheaton. It is
awesome. If I haven't made this clear already, Will Wheaton does a fantastic job, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Some people differ on this, but I think he's fantastic on Ready Player One.
So, of course. Yeah, so, head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword and download Ready Player One. It is fantastic.
Because if you go to audiblepodcast.com/sword, you get it free.
Free.
Free audiobook of your choice.
For the love of free, guys.
For the love of free Will Wheaton and 80s video games.
Oh, it's so good. I mean,
go download it or tell a friend to download it.
Lepton may disagree, but...
He does. In fact, he does.
In fact, he does disagree. Lepton being our resident... how would you describe him? How do I always describe Dvorak? What's
cranky?
The word I'm looking for? Not cranky.
Grouchy?
Not grouchy.
Leptony?
Leptony. I haven't yet described Dvorak as leptony, but I think I will now. And he'll be like, what? Crotchety. All I had to do was go, what? And then I remembered. We love you, Lepton. I love that you have a differing point of view on almost everything.
Of course, absolutely. And not just, he's not just like oppositional. He's got
he has really, really well thought out arguments to everything he writes about. And it always gets the conversation moving. And I think that's awesome. And speaking of conversations, it's time now for Bear Your Sword. Well, Jenny kicks us off this week with a post about, could this be the most accessible Stevenson book? Of course, we are talking about Reamde, which is our alternate pick for the book club this month. So she says, I've read almost everything Stevenson has written, and it amazes me how differently the books can feel from one another. It's Quicksilver true. Was a tedious intellectual chore. Yes, it was. Anathem was easy to read but had a lingering pace. Snow Crash had quick language and a lot of action. Is Reamde the easiest to read, do you think? I've only read the Kindle preview until my turn comes at the library. Aw, that's awesome.
Brad responded that the first 20% or so seemed easy to read, but he got bogged down at around 30% with the introduction of new characters.
I'm at about 25% right now, so that worries me.
Yeah, I'm not to the 30% that he's talking about, so I'm interested what happens then.
Me too. I'm kind of intrigued now.
Reamde is the most like Cryptonomicon of all of these.
Really?
But instead of crypto being the MacGuffin, MMOs are the MacGuffin, and they are much more accessible. And I don't mean that just because I play MMOs and I'm like, oh, I'm totally familiar with this and I don't work in cryptography every day, but also just, you know, the idea of a video game world with characters. I think it's a lot easier for people even who aren't familiar with MMOs to sort of wrap their heads around what's going on versus like heavy duty cryptography. So to me, that's part of what makes this so accessible. And the fact that it's not, you know, people from the 16th century or people from an alternate world. This is current day, which Cryptonomicon was as well.
Yeah, it's current day, our universe. It's not an alternate universe or an alternate history, really. It's just fictional now.
Yeah.
And
in fact, at the very beginning, it really just feels like a thriller.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it does. You know, and I think a lot of people have also been saying in the forums on Goodreads that this is neither really a sword or a laser. It's a techno thriller.
I think it falls very loosely under laser because it is about science, right? It's about video games and technology and servers and computers. But techno thriller is much more precise.
I think it reminds me a lot in the same vein. It's kind of in the same vein as something like Demon or Freedom TM.
Yeah,
except those even take it kind of to the next level in terms of something crazy happening.
There's a little smattering of sword in it. In the MMO.
We got some MMO swords.
Yeah,
that's total. True. I have found that this is more accessible for me than any of the other Stevenson books. And like you said, I think it's probably because not only is it in the now, but it's also dealing with a subject matter that I know intimately. And so all the words he uses, it's kind of like Anathem in that I can relate to the characters on a personal level, but without the extra language thrown into Anathem that made me always wonder what the hell he was talking about.
You're not now constantly the words, flipping into a glossary.
Right. Now the words that other people might not understand, and this isn't because they're made up like in Anathem, but because they're just confusing because they reference MMO stuff. Now that makes sense to me. And so I feel like I'm grasping the story a lot better because I understand the computer side of it and I understand the gaming side of it. And so it's making it a lot more digestible for me.
Yeah. You know, what strikes me about both of these books, not to get too far into kicking off stuff, which we'll do formally in a little bit, but the overlap between the themes in Ready Player One and Reamde, which they're set very differently, they're written very differently, but they involve online worlds and the perils within. And so there is sort of a resonance between the two, which I found fun given the fact that I was reading them both at the same time.
Yeah, they have a common thread, that's for sure. And they have a very different tone to them, but there is that common thread that kind of makes it fun to read them in tandem.
Yep.
I would say. And then next we have a post about games as storytelling. And my link isn't opening right now, so I can't tell you who wrote this thread.
Andrew kicked it off mentioning a post that Soden had made in a thread that video games are some of the most notable stories that Soden had encountered. Andrew says, this got me thinking again about a topic I've enjoyed some thoughtful discussion around in the past, that of video games as storytelling devices. As most of my discussions have tended to occur in the sphere of what would be called gamers, he was curious to see what those of us who are readers and lovers of books have to say about games as storytelling.
And then we actually had Jason from Bethesda Softworks chime in. He worked very heavily on Fallout New Vegas and also on BioShock back when he was at 2K. And so he knows about stories in video games, like almost more than, you know, anyone out there right now. And he chimed in and had some really, really great points. It was nice to get that industry perspective. So head over to that thread and read all about it. There's some great discussion happening over there. And it was cool that we got that industry perspective too.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of summarize, what Jason's saying is storytelling in video games is complicated because you have the story that you as the game maker are trying to tell, but then there's the story the player makes for themselves as they play the game. And that you could say like, oh, well, when I read a story, I contribute my own experiences and I make the story my own. But it's even more so in a video game where you are controlling a character and moving them around and making choices, and they are in the game and you're involved in it. So it's a much different kind of story.
I would have summarized that for you, but Goodreads is down for me right now, so I can't read anything or click on anything.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. It happens.
It's a great thread, and it goes on very long and very interesting with a lot of people, you know, giving their back and forth. Of course, the Roger Ebert column comes up where he says video games aren't art, and that gets bandied about a bit as well. Overall, I mean, it's a great side thread. It's the kind of thread I love to see sprout out of a book we're reading, because this all stems from ReamD and the two authors who are used to write the story of the MMO in ReamD and how that interacts with the problems they're having and
how they make it fit.
Yeah. And so it's funny, in a separate note, there was a thread about Ready Player One where Lepton said he just absolutely hated the book. He thought it had no literary value. And he compared it to the quest lore in MMOs, like the stuff that NPCs say. And aww. I was like, I like that stuff.
I like that stuff too. And we actually just had a big conversation about a quest line that we both did recently in WoW that we both got a huge kick out of because it was so funny and fun.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where like, yeah, there is bad quest lore from NPCs in MMOs, not to get too acronymy there. Mm-hmm. But I'm disappointed when it doesn't live up. I'm like, no, I want a good story here. Come on. It doesn't have to be as flowerly written. And I think maybe that's what Lepton's talking about. He wants the writing to be really good. And this those aren't about good writing. They're about good story.
Totally. Moving on to TV and movies this week. So apparently the Ender's Game movie is actually in the casting stage now. They're putting out casting calls for 10 characters, including Ender.
Wow, that's a good sign that this is really going to happen.
It's a good sign, but I'm still kind of concerned that they're going to screw it up.
It was a draft script written by Roberto Orsi and Alex Kurtzman. They gave a pretty good idea of how closely this film will stick to the book's story. And so there's spoilers that we're not going to get into in the casting call descriptions. But if you want to read them, go to io9.com and check out the Ender's Game movie. Just put Ender's Game casting calls. You'll probably find the story pretty quick.
I'm kind of curious how old they're casting for. If that's the thing I really want to know, is if they're aging these characters or not.
But I don't think this makes it clear, does it?
It doesn't at all.
Yeah.
No. And then up next we have sorry people who hate when we talk about Game of Thrones, but
skip ahead 20-30 seconds.
We're just going to say that they put out the season 2 promo, and I have to say it is totally stupid.
Really? Oh.
Dude, this is... How is this even a promo? It's not even a promo. It's a 17-second long...
Is that you on the comments at the Word Zone?
Yes!
Ah, that's hilarious. I totally forgot
I even commented on this.
It says, Veronica said, tease? How can they even call that a tease?
No, it's terrible. Oh, I totally forgot I commented on that. That's hilarious. It's just Stannis, and he just says some words. I don't know.
It's just a tease. I didn't judge it that
There's no video. It's just a Game of Thrones, like, title image with some fire and stuff and whatever.
You know,
what a letdown. I mean, how many views has this stupid video had? Oh, it's private now apparently, so you can't even watch it. That's annoying. Can you play it? No, the video's private now, so you can't even watch it.
You can't even play it. Oh, geez.
So basically, it's 17 seconds of the opening title credit of Game of Thrones, and Stannis Baratheon is saying some shit, and it's stupid and boring.
So there you go. Now you must be
there. I just explained it to you.
Sad that you're missing it.
I hope I didn't ruin, spoil anything for you.
Spoilers. shall we kick off our book selections for the coming read?
Sure. Go ahead.
First off, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. Mark Frauenfelder over at Boing Boing says, it seems like every decade or so a science fiction novel comes along that sends a lightning bolt through my nervous system. He compares this to Philip Jose Farmer's To Your Scattered Bodies Go, William Gibson's Neuromancer, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, Cory Doctorow's Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom.
Bias.
High, well, on the Cory Doctorow, because they both work at Boing Boing. High praise for Ernie Cline here, who is from Austin, Texas. He worked on the movie, I think he wrote the script for Fanboys, and he took sort of the money and the time that was afforded him after that and wrote Ready Player One, which is the story of Wade Watts, an 18-year-old orphan who lives with other people in a trailer park in Oklahoma City suburbs in the year 2044 during the Great Recession. Doesn't remember his father, lives with his aunt, his mother's dead. Wade spends most of his time in an abandoned van in a nearby junkyard where he uses his school-issued laptop to stay jacked into a snow crash-like metaverse called the Oasis. The key here is that the creator of the Oasis, James Halliday, has died. And when he died, it unlocked, almost demon style, a game that if you find his Easter eggs and solve his puzzle, you will win the control of the Oasis.
The control of the entire company, this multi-billion dollar corporation that runs the Oasis.
So there's a Willy Wonka aspect to this as
totally.
Well.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And yeah, so it's basically these all the players, these people that get together, and they're trying to find these keys and unlock these gates that will lead to this fortune at the end of the quest line. And at the same time, though, there's this other corporation, ISI, that's looking to take control over the company for financial reasons.
They run most of the ISPs in the country, but they don't control the Oasis, and they desperately want to.
Right. The Oasis actually runs on its own separate network, too. You can access it from the ISI access points, but the Oasis is its own network at the end of the day. And you can actually get like high speed, like fiber connections, so you can, you know, get right into the Oasis and not have to even go over other networks. So it's really cool. And it is so full of 80s trivia, because Halliday was obsessed with the 80s, because that was when he had his formative years. That was when he really grew up and became a game designer and decided what he wanted to do. And he was a very like a loner type of kid. He didn't have a good family life. And so he turned to the TV shows, the movies, the comic books, the video games. Everything out there at that time had a huge influence on his life and work. And so the point of these quests is to test people on their knowledge of the 80s. And so it brings back this whole renaissance for the 80s in 2044. And it's kind of cool because people are now like talking to their grandparents and other adults that were alive during that time to try to figure out what the trends were, what was cool. And they're all dressing that way now and talking about the movies and watching them and memorizing them. And it's pretty funny.
Yeah, anybody who enjoyed any of that stuff in the 80s is going to get a kick out of the references. Tons of references to Atari games, arcade games, little Japanese manga stuff in there from the 80s.
There's some pretty obscure stuff, for sure.
A lot of music, but it's all over the place. There's some very mainstream stuff like Rush and the movie War Games, and then there's some really obscure stuff. So it's kind of something
like
for
Lady
all
Hawk.
Tastes. Yeah. And it branches into the 80s. You get Lord of the Rings references to the movie. You get Firefly references. Mm-hmm. You get some classic fantasy references here and there. Most of it is centered around the 80s. It actually got me playing Adventure for Atari 2600 again, because Atari has an app available for the iPad. And while I was reading this, I just got the taste, because I remember that was what I would do when we would go to Kmart when I was a kid. My mom would go to the clothing store section, and I would go straight to the Atari 2600 demo that they would have set up, and I would play Adventure.
Yeah. And they have an interview with Ernest Cline, actually, as well, on this Boing Boing article. So you guys should check that out. Maybe we'll try to get him on the show as well.
Yeah, he's friends with Brian Brushwood of Scam School and NSFW show fame.
The Austin connection.
We'll see if Brian can put us in touch. We'd love to talk to Ernie and maybe, you know, have him help us wrap up the book, take your questions and all that sort of stuff. But again, you know, we'll get into some of the criticisms of the book when we do the check-ins and the wrap-ups. But that kind of sets the table for you. Go
ahead. And I'm super enjoying this. Like, I'm listening to the audiobook, and it's very funny because Will Wheaton is reading it, and there's references to Will Wheaton in the story, so he has to read about himself, and it's just pretty funny.
And of course, our alternate book is Neal Stephenson's ReamD. We've discussed that at length earlier in the show, but just, you know, to put it out there, if you're done with Ready Player One, you're not interested in Ready Player One, ReamD is the other book because it's huge, it's big, and we're all going to read it anyway, so we might as well talk about it.
Totally. Yeah, it's also has a storyline based around a virtual world, this one called Terrain. And although there's a virus in Terrain, and the whole story is centering around the crime organizations involved, the hackers involved, the Chinese gold farmers involved. It's very elaborate. And like I said, I'm only 25% of the way through, so I can't even really speak to what the story ends up being. But right now, as we mentioned, you know, it happens in present day, and it's very, a lot of leet speak in there. Not literally, but just a lot of referential stuff to MMOs and hacking and, you know, networks and the storylines that go into building an alternate world.
Shall we move on to the emails?
Yes, we shall.
Andy in Colorado writes in. He actually met us in person at South by Southwest a few years. He's an old Buzz Out Loud listener.
Nice.
He used to write the old TMV analysts press releases.
Oh, yeah.
Golden days.
Those were great.
And he is writing in because after 2 years, he has finished his third book, his first fiction book, a novella titled Trapped in My Zombie Body. He says the cover is being designed now. It's going to be going out digitally in mid-October with a paperback out in November. And he's donating 50% of royalties to a Child's Play charity.
No, to Child's Play. That's the name
of the charity. To the Child's Play charity. Sorry. He's going to send us a pre-release so we can get a look at it. And it's not going to be out till November, but I promised him I would pass along that it's coming out and then it's going to benefit Child Play. The synopsis is, imagine your body no longer listened to you. You were trapped, experiencing the world in a new way without any control over your actions. It's a world filled with sleep deprivation, mind games, and unthinkable acts. Welcome to my world.
Ooh.
So it sounds like it's first-person zombie. From the perspective of a zombie. Andy in Colorado's real name is Mario Lurig. So look for that name and Trapped in My Zombie Body, and we will let you know when it comes out.
Awesome. Well, let's say hello to some new members this week. We've got York, Brandon, Kyle, Matt, Joshua, another Brandon, Lindsay, Rob, Walter, Simon, Esther, Joe, Brian, the Duchess, ADL, I hope I'm saying your name right, Sophie, and another Joshua. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome all. We're happy to have you. Glad you're listening and posting on the forums.
And that's it for this episode of Sword and Laser.
That's all we got. So pick up Ready Player One or pick up ReamD and follow along and chat with us over on Goodreads, goodreads.com. Search for Sword and Laser or follow the discussion tab on swordandlaser.com, which is our home. And you can also email us at theswordandlaser@gmail.com. Let us know what you're reading. Let us know what authors you want us to interview or books to check out or just, you know, chat.
Say hi.
Say hi. Say
what's up.
How's it going? And we will see you guys next week.
Talk to you then.